Okay, I want to look at some of the Torah insights by Sholem Rosler. And I opened up his Sefer again yesterday. I saw this, and it hit me. He says, notwithstanding the fact that we know the 6 days of creation were characterized as very good, he says, we could read through Bereishis, and we will consistently see there are so many incidents that happened that didn't seem to turn out well. Adam and Chava got banished from Gan Eden. Cain murdered Hevel. Right? The trees didn't listen to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Right? They didn't make their bark taste like their fruit. And we see other problems, how the Avos, Avram and Yitzchak, had one good kid and one child who you would say is other than good. And he says, we all have expectations of ourselves, of our spouses, our children, and others. And you know what? Very often, the plans don't materialize. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu, in the Chumash, is trying to teach everyone that there's no point being a Monday morning quarterback, agonizing at what could have been. No. The job of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's special people is to quickly adapt and come up with plan B. Don't wallow in misery. Don't get angry. Use agility and flexibility, because life is not always and wasn't intended to be a totally smooth ride. Our job, by Rosner writes, is to make the very best of any situation we find. Right? Don't, he says, do what is trying to do. Don't fantasize about you would have what you really wanted. Don't cry over spilled milk. Take the mature approach of doing what you can today. And I just thought it was an interesting way to open the Sefer.
Right.
He talks about Moshe's lack of name in the Parsha. And he says, the Vilna Gaon points out that while we will not see the name Moshe in the Parsha, there is, if you look carefully, a hint to him in what he says a number of psukim in the Parsha. The Vilna Gaon says there are 101 psukim in Tetzava, and he says the gematria of what he calls the hidden letters missing, i.e. the spelling of Moshe's name, Mem Shin He. He says Mem is Mem Mem, Shin is Shin Yud Nun, He, to say He, you need a He and an Aleph. Adding that up is 101. The Vilna Gaon says, at first glance, on the surface, there's no Moshe. But throughout the Parsha, he says, if you in tune it, you see Moshe's presence everywhere. And as he points out, in most years, like this year, Zion Adar, Moshe Rabbeinu's Yortzai, falls out during Tetzava, this very Parsha. And he says, as a paradox, that only intensifies, right, this comment. And yet, the Vilna Gaon says, this too is an intensification of the fact to look below the surface. The Gemara in Eruvin, the Daf 100b, teaches that had Moshe not transmitted the Torah, he says, if Moshe, we hadn't given the Torah, you would think we could learn certain morals and ethics from the world about us. And he's not talking here about the people. He says, let's look at the ant, which never steals. Let's look at the dove, right, which has fidelity, has one mate all their life. If we look at a tree, we would see what is it that leads to stability. How does a tree stand firm? It has deep roots, and that's not visible to our eye. We don't see below the ground. Our own spiritual growth, strengths, comes from our avos, from our ancestors, from our parents and grandparents, who we probably, at our age, can't see any longer. But think about the influence these people still have on us. He says, this is the message of Moshe Rabbeinu's invisible presence in our parsha. We're told that the olive oil used for the menorah is somehow a metaphor for the Jewish name. The Medrash in Shmot Rabbah says that Bnei Yisroel are compared to many type of trees throughout Tanakh. Are you still on the line? I had a phone problem.
Yeah, okay. I am.
Okay, to grapevines, date palms, cedars, and others. Yet, Yirmiyahu says that Klal Yisroel compares the Jewish people to olive trees. The Kodesh Baruch Hu has called you a thriving olive tree, beautiful in form. When olives are all the way up in a tree, you have to shift the branches to get them down. At that point, right, they're moved into an olive press where they're crushed. And even more further, we continue to crush the olive to get its oil out. It says, this is the metaphor for Klal Yisroel, who have been crushed and crushed and crushed and crushed by every evil nation in the world through history. Yet, the Yid holds on to a Kadosh Baruch Hu tenaciously. And our oil, which he says is our connection to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, becomes revealed. People who look at us and have a discerning eye know that we're devoted to the Rabboni Shel Olam. He says, I'm going to look at chemistry. He says, oil is the only liquid that never mixes with other liquids, right? It floats to the top.
Right.
That is like the Jewish people who cannot be mixed up. They cannot be swallowed in to the melting pot. And he says, let's look at the oil sitting on top of a liquid. Am Yisroel will continuously rise to the top, especially when we do the will of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. We know that even when one would argue there's problems in our adherence to Hashem, the great number of Jewish scholars and the Nobel Prize winners makes no sense statistically. The Shem and Tov explains the relationship between olive oil and the yid. He says, let's look at those who are unfortunately disconnected from Torah and want to remain that way. He's only called a Jew when the anti-Semite wants to differentiate him from someone else. No matter what he does, his identity can't be hidden. Hitler knew how to find, right, Jewish blood. If a Jew fails to distinguish themselves through adherence to Torah and mitzvot, you can be certain that the anti-Semites will isolate him. It is then only under a level of duress that he happens to be revealed to be a Jew. The second type is not the best, what he says, in mitzvah fulfillment. But these are people who proudly identify themselves as Jews, and they don't want to assimilate. And they rise to the top, too, because they don't mix. They're steadfast, regardless of their level of commitment to Torah and mitzvahs. We would prefer to be what we call the third type of yid. We don't only want to be separated, but we want to be sanctified, and we want to elevate life. We want to become the light to the nations, the Or LaGoyim, right? And the Mamlachas Koyanim V'Goy Kodesh, that nation of priests. We work consistently for spiritual growth. At times, we'll go beyond the level of Zohar, Lifnei Meshuras Hadin. That ability is that no matter how crushing the circumstances are, we stand up and we act like the Olam. Rav Steinsaltz talked about the Mishkan and all the details. He talks about the 8 lolas of the Kohen Gadol and the 4 by the common. That's what the first part of our parsha deals with. Then we have the discussion of the Yemei HaMiluim, the days when Aaron and his sons were inaugurated into the Avoda and did it for the first time. He says, if you look at the Parsha and you read it carefully, you'll notice how we have numerous specific details covered in almost exhaustive depths. And by Rosner asks, pray tell, why do we need to know every detail, down to every screw, every nut and bolt? And he says, I'll tell you the truth. I don't know how many people get excited over this parsha, but Rav Steinsaltz wrote a letter with perspective. He says there's two aspects to Tetzava. One is what the Mishnah Seg signifies, and the second one is what the Mishkan was there to accomplish. He says step one, the detail, is needed for step two. And he says, Rav Steinsaltz uses a metaphor that we can relate to. The building of a spacecraft. He says, NASA will tell you it can take decades to build a proper spaceship. The complex system is comprised of thousands and thousands of tiny pieces and details. We need professionals, engineers, architects who have spent their lives studying and researching the needs for a proper spacecraft to get it to work. And it's got to be tested. It takes years to test, etc. Because they have to answer these questions before they can allow an astronaut to board. Are we sure that this spacecraft has the wherewithal to reach the destination of the mission? And then, he says, the moment of truth, right, arises, and we know the countdown starts, and they're going to, at the last moment, with bated breath and prayers for those who are religious, they turn on the switch, the go signal, and they wait. Will it get up into the heavens? Let's turn back to the Mishkan. The Mishkan's goal was to forge and foster the connection between Am Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam, to create an earthly abode where we could feel Hashem's presence. In order for this to happen, right, step one to step number infinite, let us say, right, had to be. One problem was, what did they call them? Remember those tiles? Can
right.
Ruin the whole mission. Same thing with the Mishkan. And how do we ever know if when the Mishkan was done, it was perfect enough to allow it to be used? We had the days of Miluim, where it wasn't just testing, it was testing in reality. Starting to do the Avoda. Moshe did it for a while. Steinsaltz says, I'll tell you a story about a satellite. He said people checked on a certain satellite, those involved, regularly, and it seemed to be going perfectly. perfectly to its destination. One day, the computer system said, oh boy, one of the calculations that you made and built in somehow is off by a bit. The problem was, and this sounds far-fetched, it happened on the weekend, and it wasn't detected, right, until Monday morning. Now, I don't know what, you know, fail-safe mechanisms there are at NASA. But he says, had this not been corrected, the satellite would have missed its mark. There were maybe a million calculations, and one was off by a small bit. The Mishkan Lahavdil required this level of attention. So much work was put into the actual creation, and not until the Avoda was done in this, call it, inauguration week, did they have any idea whether they were successful in having built it. Aaron and his sons went through the inauguration system, and the people stood by to see what would happen. We're told that 2 million people, maybe 3 million, stood, watched, and waited. They were waiting for the fire to come down from heaven and go onto the Mizbeah. It says that Aaron and his sons and Moshe tried to do this all week long. And Moshe and Aaron continued davening. And eventually, I guess, I don't know, probably close to the end of the week, the heavenly fire came down. In retrospect, the details may have been boring. But if the artisans, who were the engineers and technicians, were involved, and they knew what was involved, because they were all, we said, men of great and women of great Kedusha, they were never bored. They knew that they had to create this item perfectly. He says, all these parshas are actually a build-up for when we're told about all the avodos, the Torah's Kohanim and Vayikra, how did it all happen. Rabbi Rosner concludes, perhaps this is not even just a mashal, a parable, it's reality. We know the astronaut's suit cannot have one flaw in it, so that it could cost the astronaut their life. The big day kahuna, therefore, how much more so needed perfection. If a Kohen Gadol somehow went to, quote, the Kedusha atmosphere at the wrong time, with the wrong clothes, etc., it could cost his life. He says, the Torah is teaching us that perfection and attention to detail is necessary when you're trying to achieve something of importance. Only when it was done properly could the Mishkan have become a place where the heavenly fire came down and where HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically acquiesced and said, yes, it's what I really want. Okay. That's today's class. I appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Call to us.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.